This is the RightsCast Network at rightscast.net.
Empathy, Imminent Dawn, a novel by R.R. Campbell. Coming January 2019 from Nine Star Press. For more, visit empathynovel.com.
To date, this show has focused on writing flash fiction, short stories, novels, and screenplays, but what about video games? You may have never considered it, but writers are needed to make the narratives in video games shine as well. For this episode of the R.R. Campbell RightsCast, I interviewed a longtime writer for video games of all kinds, a writer who also happens to be an award-winning and New York Times bestselling author in the world of fiction, too. Hey there, I'm R.R. Campbell, and welcome to episode 35 of the R.R. Campbell RightsCast here on the RightsCast Network. For this episode, I'm joined by Matt Forbeck, author of titles including Halo, Bad Blood, and the upcoming Endless Quest books. Aside from these, he's worked on video games like Harvey Birdman, Attorney at Law, and role-playing games for The Lord of the Rings and Brave New World. Given his breadth of experience, I found this conversation with Matt to be fascinating, and I'm sure you will too. Stay tuned after the interview for updates on what you can expect for the next few episodes of the show, including when Matt will be returning to the RightsCast Network later this year. Thanks, as always, for listening. Well, thank you, Matt, very much for joining me on this episode of the RightsCast here on the RightsCast Network.
Thanks for having me, Ryan. I appreciate it.
Yeah, I'm really excited to talk about this topic because it's one that I think many listeners might not be super familiar with, and that, of course, is writing for video games. So why don't we start right away with you describing how you got your start in writing for video games, and what games have you worked on?
Those are good questions. It was a long time ago, so it's a little bit fuzzy for me, but basically I got started running in video games is that I started out in tabletop games. And a lot of the people I knew who were in tabletop games ended up moving into video games over the years, mostly because when the video game developers were looking for writers and for designers, we didn't have college programs back in those days. The only way they could find somebody was to actually go out and find people who had any experience in this kind of stuff at all, so they started writing tabletop games. So there was a buddy of mine named Rich Dansky, who's been the head Clancy writer for Ubisoft for 18 or 19 years now.
Oh, wow.
And he started tapping me to do some things for Ubisoft over the years. And as I got more and more involved, I ended up developing other friendships and relationships with different companies. And so they started contacting me as well. First video game I think I worked on that was published was Armed Assault, which was a first-person shooter video game from a very highly realistic thing. But I had worked on a number of other games before that. One of the dirty secrets of video game development is that a large majority of the games don't ever see the light of day. They're not even announced, much less published, right?
Right.
So I know a lot of people who have worked in video games for, you know, years and years, sometimes up to as many as 10 years or more, where they have collected a paycheck and they've gotten benefits and all that kind of stuff, but they have never seen a game get shipped.
Wow. Right?
Which can be a little bit disheartening, especially for people getting into this because they like creative stuff, which is the main reason you go into any kind of writing at all. But on the other hand, they got paid, so they're able to
that
cover
always
their mortgage and support their families and all that good kind of stuff. So it's hard to complain entirely, although that's not the desired outcome for anybody.
Well, and that always, you know, that does help. Getting some cash on the side certainly helps. And I think there is a bit of an analogy over in writing fiction. You know, there are so many manuscripts that we might start writing that never see the light of day in what we would have been hoping for them getting published. But it's about the experience. It's about having the opportunity to write and tell the stories and get out there and, you know, in the case of writing for a video game, collaborate a bit with some other folks too, I'm sure.
Yeah, I mean, it's a little bit different than the fact that when you're writing a book, you're by yourself usually, and you can get shot down by people at various points, like your publisher or your editor, or maybe nobody ever buys it or whatever, right?
Right.
But with video games, you're often working on a contract and you've been contracted to do this.
Yeah, and what does the process look like for writing for a game overall?
Well, what generally happens is you get approached by a producer or a designer, usually the producer of the game, or an associate producer or assistant producer, and they call you up and they say, or they email you and say, what does your time look like? Do you have the time to actually work on this with us? And they outline what your involvement in the project's going to be, right? And that can vary from game to game quite a lot. If you're brought at the beginning part of a game, often it's, you know, helping out with stories and characters and building plot arcs and all that kind of stuff. If you're brought in at the end of the game, it's often more writing dialogue and what are they called, barks, which are these little random bits of dialogue that you hear in video games for things like, oh, stop shooting me, or help me out over here, or head over there instead of here. Things like that that are randomly called, you know, dozens of times in a game, and you want to write long lists of them so that people don't get bored listening to the same thing every time. And once you've got all that outlined as to, you know, what the length of the contract is and what you're going to be doing it for, then you start talking about how much you're going to get paid and what are the milestones for this, so you know when you get paid and what you're doing. And then you set to work. And often then the producer will hand you off to somebody else who is your liaison within the company. And, you know, it can depend. A lot of times you work on this stuff out of house and you never see anybody ever. And other times you're brought in house. So sometimes they'll fly you all around the world to go to different places and work on these things. So I've been to Sweden and Singapore and Shanghai and lots of other places working on video games over the years by different companies that wanted to bring me out to wherever they happen to be.
Wow, that's really cool. I mean, I think what's really interesting about all of that is that it sounds like, you know, kind of contrasting it with writing fiction, or at least in the case of a novel anyway, you know, you might be doing some of that work, like you said, alone and from home, but ultimately there is this very collaborative aspect to it, and that it does take a full team of, you know, dozens and dozens of people to actually get a game from conception to release.
Yeah, literally it's hundreds in a lot of cases. I mean, if you look at the credits to just about any AAA video game, they're as long as, if not longer than a film, right? And a lot of those people, you know, it's over the course of years even. So a lot of the people who start on the process for developing the video game are not there at the end of it. I've worked on a number of video games over the years where I didn't actually receive credit for it in the final product, because what happens is at a certain point, somebody goes around with a piece of paper or an email document and says, hey, were you involved in this? Or can you tell me who was involved in this? So we can get their name in here. And if the guy I worked with or the people I worked with are no longer with the company or forget about me on that day, then I just don't get my name.
Then you're just not there. You've got the experience at least.
Exactly. Well, and the check's clear, really, which is the important part, you know, because this is not an art project for me. This is how I feed my family, or help feed my family. So you know, the check's clear. I try not to be too irate about the fact that they forgot to put my name on something. And then I can prod them and say, hey, you know, you guys, next time you do a patch, can you stick my name in there as well?
Right. Perfect. There's
sometimes that works too.
Yeah. There's always the opportunity for them to make that quick little change, as long as you're keeping your eyes and ears open for when they might be pushing that through.
Exactly. And you never know. It's always a lot of fun. I love work. It's a very different experience than working on novels, where you're often again by yourself. Maybe you're working with one other person, or maybe you're working, if you're doing tie-in novels, you might be doing it with a team of approvals people. But when you're working in a video game, often you're working in conjunction with a designer, and then they have what are called narrative designers too, who are often writers, but just as often are not. And these are people who design the different aspects of the game. Like I worked on Ghost Recon Wildlands, which was a Tom Clancy game that came out last year. And they had narrative designers go through and design all the different adventures and the missions that you went on to. And then it was my job to actually turn those into texts, or write the text for those, that then the producer would take to a bunch of actors, and the actors would do voiceovers for the stuff. So it's a fairly complex process that goes from one part to the other, and you're just one bit of the chain, so to speak, when it comes to doing that kind of a dialogue, and you're not doing the original creative stuff. It's very vital, it's important, but it's at the same time, you're not the lead creative in this. You're not the author or the auteur, so to speak, that's controlling a lot of this. You're just part of the team.
Yeah, and let's maybe explore with a little more depth then some of the ways that writers help bring a game to life. Because, of course, you've mentioned things like barks, you've mentioned involvement with the narrative designers. So how in depth are you brought in? And I'm sure it depends on a given project. But if you're hired, you know, as a writer who's not the author, so to speak, of the game, as you've just mentioned, at what stages do you find yourself getting most involved, and how deep does that really go?
Yeah, it depends on the game and the project. For instance, and there have been some games I've been brought in at the very early levels where they're like, you know, we have this idea for a game, and you're almost never brought in at the beginning. Nobody comes up to you and says, do you have an idea for a game?
Right.
Because, and this is the funny part, people say, I have this great idea for a game. I want you to help me pitch it to this company. Every person in a company has probably got 16 ideas for a video game, right?
Right.
And they don't need to go out to somebody they've never heard of, who's never worked on anything before, who just happens to have what they think is a cool idea that probably a dozen other people have come up with before them. They don't need to do that. They have other people now. So, and, you know, often the guys who are running the company have plenty of ideas on their own and don't really need to go hunting for them. So they come up with a basic idea, but then they need help executing it, right? Because that's actually where the value comes to any kind of product, is it's not in the idea itself, it's in how you execute it. So they hire on other people to help them out with that. They can be, you know, visual artists, programmers, modelers, coders, all these different things, and then writers as well. So even at the early stages, they'll say, okay, we've got this idea for this character, but we don't know really too much about him, who he is, what his backstory is, why should we care about him, that kind of a thing. So then they will haul me in to help out with it. And in some games, I've been called in to do that kind of development. Other games, they call you in a little bit later to write the cutscenes for the characters. We already know who these characters are and what they're doing, but maybe we need to figure out ways to show that on a screen in ways that are emotionally satisfying and have some impact for people as well. So they'll call me in to do that kind of stuff. And that's more like screenwriting than doing game writing in those snippets that we do. And those can be anywhere from, you know, 30 seconds to 5 minutes or however long they have to be. Occasionally I've been called in to do commercials for video games as well, where I'll write the script for the commercial. And then the team will go off and, you know, create that thing. I'd say film it, but there's no film anymore.
Right.
They're all done entirely by CGI in video files instead. So, you know, you can be brought in at that level, and that's actually fairly creatively satisfying, because you feel like you're having a long-lasting impact on the characters and the experience that people are going to be having. And when you get down toward the end of the game, you still have quite a bit of an impact on it, but it's a lot more workmanlike and less creative, I suppose, to be working on those later stages where somebody says, okay, we need to write about this scenario here. You know, go send the ghosts out to go kill this guy here. And you have to write stuff that is exciting and informative at the same time, and also reveals something about the character ideally at the same time as well, the ones that people are working with, and at various levels of success, obviously. And then you have voice actors who can help you out with that, and you know, hopefully do a lot more breathing into life of these characters than you can just with writing as well. It's actually really a lot of fun, but it's a very, very different experience than writing a novel.
Yeah, and though it may be different, I really am hearing a lot of parallels insofar as the actual storytelling elements are concerned. You know, you've mentioned things like needing to develop a backstory for a character, or just working on their development in general. There was a brief comparison to sort of screenwriting, for example. So are there, you know, when you're sitting down, if you're involved, you know, earlier in the process, are there differences in your approach to things like story structure, characterization, or pacing, or do the same general rules apply across fiction writing and writing for video games?
Well, one of the things about fiction is, because it's all in your own head, you don't have to be as firm with everything at every stage, right? So for instance, if I come up with a character, I have a vague idea of the character. I can sit down and start writing the story and see where it takes me. Or if I want to outline it even, I can do that. Some people will sit down and write character profiles and all that kind of stuff. I've never been that kind of a writer, but I do know people who manage to do that. But that's actually the kind of thing you need to do with video games, because again, you can't just make it up as you go, and you can't trust the people that you're working with to be able to just read your mind, right? You have to express everything at every point. So for instance, if I'm doing character profiles, you know, I'll go through and say, okay, this is how tall, you know, it's like doing a role-playing game where you have a character sheet, actually.
Right.
Where you say, okay, this is what the character's name is, this is his backstory, this is how tall he is, what the color of their eyes are, what their sexuality is, you know, what kind of music they listen to, what color clothes they like to wear, you know, what they do on the weekends, what their passions are, what their hatreds are, all this kind of stuff. And you actually build this character out in excruciating detail, mostly because you know, you have to communicate this to other people on the team. So the artists, the programmers, the people who are doing the motion capture for these video games, even that kind of stuff, they go back to these profiles to inform them as to how they should do stuff. And even, again, we have motion capture actors who will now go out and walk in different ways to capture that. Like one character might saunter, another character might have this really aggressive kind of way. Another guy might swagger along, and another guy might tiptoe along. And these are all captured by actors in motion capture studios that are then rigged up for the models. The models are then put on these rigs and animated in that way. And it's just so many different incredible steps. But a lot of that starts out with the writing, because that's the way we express this stuff to each other, right? That the different people who are working on the game can all go back to that profile that you've written and say, oh, that's what I'm supposed to be working off of. That's what I'm supposed to be riffing off of. And it's a collaborative process. So somebody can come back and say, well, yeah, I like that, but I think this is actually more like that character. And you can look at it and say, yeah, maybe you're right. Or you can say, no, it's nothing like that at all. And you know, if there's any kind of disputes, it's usually not the writer who wins, it's the producer who gets to adjudicate between all the different people and say, okay, it's my job to make this happen. And so I get to choose between this. And as the writer, you get to say, well, you can argue your point, and you know, usually have to say, okay, if I lose that point, I lose that point. I move on to a different point.
Sure. And I mean, one of the things that I really like about how you describe all of this, and I think one of the things that would probably make this appealing to many people, is the idea that it is such a dynamic and fluid and collaborative process. You know, there really can be a loneliness to writing a fiction, you know, a work of fiction by the glow of our laptops, but it is nice once in a while to put ourselves out there and be involved in this, you know, greater project, whether it ever sees the light of day or not. Like you said, there's a lot of satisfaction in being involved in something like this creatively. So with that in mind, is there a way, short of, you know, happening to run into the right producer at the right time, is there a way that someone can, you know, maybe put themselves on a path to start getting involved more in this kind of community?
Sure. Actually, I have a son who's interested in doing this stuff. He's off in college right now, and he's trying to figure this stuff out. Now, he's got the advantage because I can open doors for him. Right?
Sure. Yeah, right. Say, that helps.
Hey, Marty, you know, if you're interested in this kind of thing, maybe you can help me out here, or I can point you in the right direction. But there's an organization called the International Game Developers Association, and I think membership is $50 a year or something like that. It's cheaper for students, and you can join up with that. There's also a subgroup of that called the Writers Special Interest Group, the SIG. And I'm on the board of people that helps run that. So I'm one of the three people in charge of that. My platform, when they asked me to volunteer for this and run for election, was, don't vote for me, I'm too busy. But apparently I got elected anyway.
That's funny.
And then when they tried, amongst the board, we tried to decide who was going to be the president, so to speak. And I was the first to say, not it. And so... Tobias is Heisner, I believe is how you pronounce his last name, is actually the president at the moment. But you can join the Writers SIG, and there's a online mailing list for this, and there's also a Facebook group that we post lots of different bits of advice on, and we post job postings. People can ask questions about how they want to do their portfolios, that kind of stuff. And that's a great resource for people who are starting out, and actually even working writers who are looking for work or asking questions about the finer points of what they're doing. So I would always recommend people go check that out. If you're in school and you're looking to do this kind of stuff, you can just go, I mean, any kind of English degree or writing degree will help, but you don't even have to do that. I mean, you know, one of the funny things about being a writer is that nobody ever asks you, what's your degree in, right? They just want to see your work. They want to see that you've done a good job, especially if you're a novelist. And nobody says, do you have an MFA in creative writing?
Right, right.
They say, let me see your book, mm-hmm. right? And a lot of that works out with writing for video games as well. They'll say, let me see what you've already done. And they'll often ask you to do tests for video game writing as well. They'll say, okay, here's the kind of stuff we're looking for. Can you write three of these, right, very quickly? And hopefully they're short and not asking too much from you. And as a caveat, anytime any of this stuff might be used for somebody, they should be paying you, right? You shouldn't be doing work that might be included in their game for free. They should be paying you a little bit. And the better companies will actually pay you for just taking a test, period, right? They'll say, what's your rate? And this is how long we think it'll take to do this. And And we'll cut you a check just for taking the test. That's how you know they're serious large companies. Now, if they're small companies just starting out like you are, then, you know, of course, they're probably not going to pay you to do this stuff. But you should also make it clear that, you know, this is a limited thing, that you're not going to be writing tests for them for 2 or 3 weeks. It should be something that takes you a day at most, right?
Right. And I have to imagine that, you know, aside from getting involved in some of these different organizations or seeking out, you know, an education, perhaps, I'm sure it doesn't hurt to have an education in game design and things like that. I have to imagine that just playing video games is a really nice thing to do to get yourself in the right mindset to approach this stuff.
Sure. I mean, hey, rationalize the hell out of that. Yeah, I'm just doing research, Mom. But it's, I'm sitting down right now playing through Ghost Recon Wildlands in preparation for future work that I'm going to be doing, hopefully with Ubisoft. And this is a game I worked on. So I'm like, oh yeah, honey, I'm just working on my job right now by playing through all this stuff. But yeah, playing video games is a great way to do it. Honestly, I had I helped out with the Madison, Wisconsin chapter of the IGDA. They have chapters all around the world. And so I was part of the people running the Madison chapter about 10 years ago. And somebody came up and said, I really want to work on writing video games. I said, that's great. What kind of games do you like? He says, oh, I don't play games. I'm like, well, you know, you're really not doing this right.
Right.
If you don't actually consume the things that you want to be involved with. I mean, nobody would step up and say, I want to write movies, screenplays for films, but I've never watched a film, right?
Yep.
Or I want to write comic book scripts, but I've never read a comic book. Go out there and actually indulge in these things, you know, explore them, investigate them, and figure out what it is about them and how they work. Just the same as you would if you're trying to write in a particular genre, you go out and read the books in that genre, right? The classics and the cutting edge stuff, just so you have a common language with people. I mean, one of the craziest things about trying to work in video games is that we don't have a canon, so to speak, of games that everybody has played. And not all of them apply to every type of game that you might be working on as well. So the first thing that happens every time I go talk to somebody about a video game project is they say, it's kind of like this game, or it takes elements from this other game. And my next thing I have to do after that is go buy those games and play them, right? I may not have to play through them entirely, but I do have to play them. So I have a common vocabulary and these touchstones that we can refer to when we're talking about how this new thing that we're working on works.
Right. I mean, just like you've said, it's like if you want to be a strong writer in the world of fiction, you should be putting yourself out into the bookish world and making sure that you are well read in the genres in which you want to write. So same concept applies. Another great parallel there. So overall, I mean, I think we've learned a lot over the course of this brief conversation, but if you have any final thoughts you'd like to share with folks who have an interest in getting into this field or anything else that might be, you know, jostling around up there in your brain on the topic of writing for video games, feel free to share it.
Sure. I think it's like anything else that you want to do. If any other creative field, you should have a passion for it, right? If you don't actually have a passion for it, don't try. Don't look at it and say, ooh, there's money in video games, right? And, you know, it's true. Video games do pay fairly well once you get up to a certain level with them. But, you know, the same thing can be said of novels and of screenplays and anything else. If you don't have a passion for that, the time of the years often that you're going to be banging your head against the wall, trying to develop your skills and your contacts in that industry are going to be some of the most painful years you're going to spend. It's not worth it for you, okay? So follow what you're interested in. And that will lead you naturally to what you want to work in, as opposed to doing it the other way around. Okay, don't go chasing after cash. Chase after things that you would like to be associated with, and it can be a tremendous amount of fun. It's amazing to go out there. Like I was a script doctor for Assassin's Creed Origins that came out last year too. And it's amazing to see a game out there and to play a game where so many other people worked on it, and to think about how many thousands, if not millions, of people are going to be playing this and enjoying it. And that's flattering in a way that most authors will never get a chance to work on a book that millions of people read, but you can work on a video game that millions of people play. That's pretty damn cool.
Yeah, that's really neat. And I think the thing that I appreciate most in there is that whether we're writing for video games, whether we're writing fiction, be that novel length, we're doing short stories, flash fiction, what have you, we just got to go with where our passion lies. And I think that that is the best moral that we can take away from the story that we have walked ourselves through here. So thank you very much, Matt Forbeck, for joining me on this episode of the show. I'm looking forward to having you back another time.
Thanks very much, Ryan. It was always a pleasure.
That's all for this episode of the R.R. Campbell Rightscast here on the Rightscast Network. If you like what you've heard, I'd love it if you could head over to iTunes and leave us a 5-star rating and review under the Rightscast Network name. Doing so will help other writers like yourself find conversations like these, which is something we're always grateful for as we continue to grow our reach as a resource to the community. Thanks as always for tuning in, and once again, thanks to Matt Forbeck for swinging by the show. Of course, I owe a huge debt of gratitude to Kristen Oakley as well, not only because she introduced me to Matt, but because she's a patron of the Rightscast Network over at patreon.com/rightscast. In exchange for her patronage, Kristen gets shoutouts like these in each episode of the show, votes in the annual Rightscast Awards, and other perks including discounts on editing services, early access to full episodes of the show, and Rightscast stickers. If you'd like to learn more about contributing to the Rightscast Network at $1, $2, or even $3 per episode in exchange for rewards like those mentioned earlier, you can visit patreon.com/rightscast and become a member of the family today. The hits keep coming with our next handful of episodes and beyond here on the R.R. Campbell Rightscast, beginning with a new episode on July 20th, which will feature agent and partner publisher Laura Zatz of Wise Inc. Creative Publishing. Then on July 27th, we'll be joined by recurring Rightscast Network guest Cheryl Meir before Matt Forbeck returns to the show on August 3rd to talk about writing novelizations of other media. Be sure to stay tuned to the Rightscast Twitter feed for updates on future episodes of all your programming here on the network by following us at Rightscast. For other writerly updates, you can follow me on Twitter at @IamRRCampbell or sign up for our newsletter at rrcampbellwrites.com/newsletter. If you're looking for more episodes of our programming between now and the debut of the next episode, you can find all of our episodes at rightscast.net. Until the debut of the next episode on July 20th, you know what to do. Write on and write well. This is the Rightscast Network at rightscast.net.